Revelation 22, beginning at verse 1. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and His servants will serve Him. They will see His face, and His name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. There will be no more need of the lamp, light of a lamp, or the light of the sun. For the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. I want to talk this morning about the seven blessings of heaven. It has nothing to do with the golden streets. It has everything to do with what God has prepared for His people. And here we see seven blessings laid out. Let's go through them. First of all, it says, 22:1, that there will be the river of the water of life. We take water for granted, although I was hearing this morning that politicians have found, you know, they invent ways to tax. They've come up with a rain tax. If you're a commercial property and you have any paved area, they're going to measure how much paved area you have, and you have to pay a tax on the amount of pavement that you have. But there was a time when water was precious. But I want you to notice something about this water. It's not any water. It's the water of life. We live in a day in which stuff doesn't bring life. Do you realize that probably, and they're having trouble calculating because they don't know how many accidents are actually accidents versus are deliberate, but probably the number one killer of young people today under 20 years of age is suicide in the United States. They have Nintendos and Wii's and game systems. Cell phones. But they're not alive. They have Facebook friends, but none in real life. Jesus said, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, but we have attempted to give children more and more and then wonder why they're not alive. But in heaven, there is the water that meets the deepest needs of our soul. It's the water of life. I've heard the accounts. I would love to experience it in this life. Of when they talk about when these great revivals break out, not the little things we've seen, the great revivals, and the people will describe it. I've seen their faces as they say these words. There was life in the air. There was not one unhappy person. There was life in the air. Every face was tear-stained, but they were tears of blessing. The water of life. We desperately need life in our society today. When we have governors of a certain party racing each other to see how aggressive they can be in murdering children. The governor of New York makes the statement a couple weeks ago, or passes the law and forces the buildings in New York to celebrate it, that you can murder babies up until the moment of birth. And now the governor in Virginia, they pass a law, and it's working through the legislature, that you can not only murder a baby up to the moment of birth, but after birth. That the baby would be born and would be there, and the mother go, and they'd kill it. That is barbarism that belongs in Nazi Germany. And it is being celebrated today. That's death. We need life. And in heaven, there is the water of life. I want you to notice that water is available to all. It says it flows down the middle of the great street of the city. It's available to all. We live in a society where those who are powerful take what they want, deny the rights of those who do not have their resources. But God is free with His gifts. James tells us in James 1, every good and perfect gift comes down from above. And God is free with His gifts, and He allows everyone to partake. And in heaven, the water isn't hoarded. It isn't kept in a cistern. It isn't stored away. It flows freely through the city. Second of all, I want you to notice verse 2. On each side of the river stood the tree of life. Remember the Garden of Eden? That tree that was there that mankind was told to eat of? They chose the tree of knowledge over the tree of life. I wonder today how many people are choosing the ability to set their own rules over life. I think the saddest verse in the Bible is when God has to say, I have set before you today life and death. Choose life. Can you hear the pleading in His voice as He says that? Why would anyone choose death? How often do we hear about people struggling with addiction, yet today, how many people will shove a needle in their arm for the first time? Choose death. There's the tree of life. And I want you to notice two things about that tree. First of all, it says that it bears its 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. We're spoiled in this nation. We can have moderately fresh fruit any day of the week. I often joke I eat a lot at Boston Market. That's not a commercial, just a statement of fact. And somebody was saying, how do you like it? And I said, oh, they ruined me. They said, how? And I said, Thanksgiving just isn't the same when you can have a turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes any day of the week. But I want you to notice that in heaven it's always fresh. It's always fresh. The things of this world grow stale. the older you get, the worse that becomes, doesn't it? Some of you who are going up in years, you know, I remember the first time I took my son on King to Ka. What was then, it may not be now, it may be, I don't know. They keep trying to outdo each other, but it was the largest, fastest roller coaster in the world when we went on it. They propel you. You sit flat on the bottom, and there's none of that clickety, 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 clickety. You sit at the bottom, and they use the kind of steam catapult that they use to launch fighter jets off of aircraft carriers to propel you in, I forget how many seconds, you can look it up. It's just a handful of seconds from 0 to 110 miles an hour. And then you shoot more than straight up. It's actually an 89-degree curve, not a 90. More than straight up, 412 feet. And then you shoot over the top. And when you do, you get slammed up into the thing with negative Gs. And then you go back down 412 feet down the other side. And then you bump a few times and come around and get off. And after waiting 3 hours in line, you get your 12-second ride or whatever it is. But we came to an end, and the difference in the staleness of this world, David had brought his friend, I'd taken the three of us to Great Adventure, and he's like, ho, 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 ho. And his friend's like, ho, ho, ho. And they go, Dad, what'd you think? I go, it was okay. No matter how fast you build the roller coaster, after a while, they're just okay. The things of this world grow stale. I remember when I was a young man and I went to Eldridge Park and they had this little roller coaster. I think I could have stood on the ground and touched the top of it. But it seemed like that. It wasn't very big, but man, oh, that was so exciting. And now one 50 times scarier. Oh, it's okay. You see, this world grows stale. But heaven never gets stale. It's always new. It's always fresh. There's always a new crop of fruit. It's not the same old, same old. Number three. Look at verse 3. No longer will there be any curse. Do you realize we've lived our entire lives under a curse? This world has known nothing but curse for all of its recorded history. Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. God said to Adam, cursed is the ground because of you. Cursed is the ground because of you. Genesis 3, 17. And we've lived under that curse. We feel it. People say, oh, nothing ever goes right. That's not true, is it? There are times when things go right. But what doesn't happen is it never lasts. There's always that curse in the background, isn't there? Solomon, who had more than I'll ever have, and probably more than you'll ever have, clicks off through the book of Ecclesiastes all the things he had and how unsatisfied he was with them. And at the end of the thing, after being a man who had any woman he wanted, as much money as he could ever spend, political power, acclaim, an entire kingdom of sycophants to tell him how wonderful he was. In Ecclesiastes 12:1, he says what? Ecclesiastes 12:1. in Ecclesiastes 12:1, he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. There's a common thread to all of human life. Evil days come. That's the curse. Your evil days may be different than my evil days. We just, during prayer time this morning, heard the story of a man struggling with mental illness. He gets better. Everything's going wonderful. And then it's not. I don't know what that's like. You don't know what that's like. And I pray that neither of us ever do, but there are people who struggle with that. There are some of us that live with pain all the time. I moved wrong at school the other day and I winced, and somebody said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Oh, it's just my back." And they said, "Do you always have problems with your back?" "Yeah." Some of you know what I'm talking about. It's just always there. The curse. But in heaven there is no curse. No longer will there be any curse. No limit to the blessing. Today we live especially under a curse. Deuteronomy 28:23. Write that verse down. Deuteronomy 28:23. And I want you to ponder what it says, because it's in the middle of all of the cursing chapter. And it says, if you disobey, if you disobey, if you disobey, if you disobey. Have we as a nation disobeyed God? He says, the heavens will be as bronze over your heads. You ever feel like that? Just like there's a bronze heavens up there. What a joy it will be to be utterly out from under that curse. Never again will there be a curse. Oh, what a blessing. Number four. Number four, look at the end of verse 3, Revelation 22:3. At the end it says, the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city. We will be gathered around the throne. Do you remember what Isaiah 6:1 says? Isaiah 6:1, in the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. And Isaiah got a little peek at the throne room of God. But there is no throne room in the new heaven. Because do you know why there are throne rooms? It's to keep people out. The throne is just there in the midst of the city. No one is kept out. It was an awesome thing to be called into the presence of a king in ancient days. In fact, there were kingdoms where unless you were invited to come into the king, if you appeared, you could be slain on the spot. If you appeared at the king's door without an invitation, the king would give you thumbs up or thumbs down, and your life was ended right there just for walking through the door. Even his own wife faced that. Just read the book of Esther. Oh, but God isn't like that. God puts his throne in the middle of the city. And you know, those angels that shout for all eternity from the moment they were created, as eternity rolls on, are shouting, holy, 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 we get to join them You get to join them around the throne. There's the water of life. It makes us feel alive. There's the fruit that's always fresh and always new. Never gets stale. There's no curse. We get to gather around the throne, number 5. Notice what it says in verse 4. And they will see His face. They will see His face. We will have intimacy with God. We won't be strangers. Do you ever feel like you're far away from God? Ever feel like He's over there and I'm over here and there's a great gulf between us? No more. We'll get to be with Him face to face forever. Remember what God told Moses in Exodus 33:20. Remember in Exodus 33:20, God said to Moses, "No one may see my face and live." No one can see my face and live. But there, we'll see His face. And then notice what it says, and His name will be on their foreheads. We'll belong to Him. We'll belong to Him. You ever feel estranged? Not in heaven. We'll belong to Him. I can't bring myself to take off my ring. Kathy's been gone 4 years, but there's something about belonging to someone, isn't there? We belong together. Can you imagine that God allows us to belong to Him? Number six. Look at verse 5. There will be no more night. Do you know how much worse the night makes things? It's bad enough to be broken down along the side of the road, but if you're going to be broken down along the side of the road, when do you want to be broken along down? At 10 in the morning or at 2 in the morning? My daughter reminded me of a story she asked me about. It that was a short story, a science fiction short story I read a number of years ago, and it tremendous little piece, A Walk in the Dark. I believe it was by Ray Bradbury. Whew. The dark is scary. Bad things happen in the dark. Jesus said, "Men that do evil do it in the dark." No night there. No darkness. Always light. I remember one time my first over the road car was a little MGB, and the starter motor started the big main crank gear in it, and it was getting old, and that crank gear had worn down because it was a four-cylinder. It stopped at one of two spots where the starter motor would go in, and those two spots were worn down from the starter motor driving into it all the time. Once in a while, you'd turn the key, and it'd go click, 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 and you knew that that starter motor had jammed in, and it was jammed, and you had to get out and put a piece of pipe against it and pound on it with a hammer, and it would free up, and then it would start. And it was a hassle. But, you know, in those days when you were a kid, you bought a car and prayed that it ran. And it was bad enough during the day because it was an old car and it leaked oil, and so there was always baked oil on it. And you had to find the, of course, the starter motor wasn't right when you opened the hood. It was down underneath. And during the day, you'd just get out and you'd take it and you'd pound on it and you'd go. But I remember we were coming back from some kind of service and it was raining cats and dogs. And I was in a white shirt, suit, tie. And I parked my car at my friend's house. He came to his house to pick up the car, and I get in and I go, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, please. It's raining so bad. Let it start." And it did. And it started. And I put it in reverse and backed out of his driveway and went to put it in first gear to go, and it stalled. "Oh God, one more time, one more time, one more time." Click. And those of you who have ever been up to my mom's, you know how dark it gets up there. We're not talking street lights. We're talking the stars are the only light up there. And when it's raining, there ain't many of them in the sky. I take off my coat. I take off my shirt. Here I am now, bare-chested. And of course, I don't have a flashlight, because why would you carry a flashlight in a car that always broke down? And I'm feeling around on this greasy motor in the rain, in my suit pants. Oh, how much easier it would have been if there was some light. There'll never be any darkness in heaven. And then last of all, the seventh blessing. Notice what it says, "And they will reign forever and ever." God invites us to join Him in ruling. One of the most stunning statements in the Bible is not that Jesus will judge the world. That we can understand. Can you understand that Jesus would judge the world? That makes sense, doesn't it? But here's the thing. Look with me at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Verse 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 2. "Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if you are to judge the world, are you not competent to judge trivial cases? Do you not know that we will judge angels?" Angels. There are some people who say that the reason Satan rebelled was he saw that in God's plan. When God made humanity, he saw that and he said, "How can you make those little mud people?" Because remember, what were we made out of? The dirt of the earth. "How can you make those to be over me?" Bible says we will. There's a condition, though, isn't there? Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 2 puts a condition on that. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 11. 2 Timothy 2:11. If we died with Him, we will also live with Him. Jesus said, whoever will save their life will. Whoever loses his life for my sake, he will save it. If we endure, we will also reign with Him. Remember what Jesus said? It's not whoever professes me as Lord, is it? That's the problem. Oh, they made a decision. Okay. Question isn't, do I make a decision today? The question is, do I live it tomorrow? Because Jesus said, everyone who professes will be in heaven. Jesus says, but he who endures to the end will be saved. He who endures to the end, Matthew 24, 13, 14. He who endures to the end. We endure, we will reign with Him. Here's my question. Are you enduring today? We're not living in heaven today, are we? And this life can feel pretty stale, pretty dry. The water can be pretty lifeless. God's throne room sometimes seems far, far, far away. But He's given us these seven promises. And it won't just be for 70 years or 80 years or 90 years or 100 years. Or even, God forbid, like that woman in France that died a couple years ago, 122 years. That won't even be the first tick of the clock in heaven. It'll be forever and ever. Don't miss out. Don't give up. Don't turn aside. Don't go back. He who endures to the end will be saved. If we endure, we will reign with Him. Be there. Let's bow together. Oh God, may our hearts be transformed and our lives be changed by the promises You have given us. Psychiatrists tell us our past dictates our present. Go back and blame mommy or daddy or somebody else. It's not your fault. If you can find out who to blame, you'll feel better. You tell us our future determines our past, and our future determines our present. You have said, I've given you these promises, believe them. Reach out in faith and obey them. Lay hold of eternal life. Lord, I thank You for the promises You've given us in Jesus' name.